The city of Gotham gives rise to villains and darkness. Heroes and defenders of justice will rise up. The villains have chosen their dark path.
Our heroes made the choice of truth over personal happiness, and we have chosen to document it all. We are here to tell their stories. We are Gotham Undercover.
Hello and welcome, everyone. This is Gotham Undercover, ha ha, Joker episode. I am Karen the Scarlet Cougar.
And I'm Jeff, X-Force 11.
And welcome to Gotham Undercover. This is episode 84. We are part of the Golden Spiral Media Network. Find us at goldenspiralmedia.com or the show's Facebook page by searching for Gotham Undercover.
Yes, and we are so glad that you've joined us for our first mandatory brunch meeting.
How I wish. I had pizza for breakfast today.
Oh, brunch.
Their brunch looked really good.
Yes, indeed.
It did. And you know, I've heard there are lots of really good brunch places around here in Atlanta. I haven't had a chance to try any of them. But man, when I look them up, oh, they look so good. Southern food.
Oh, there's a place, a co-op in my town that has on Saturday and Sunday mornings, and it's out of sight. It's great. So,
but it made me really hungry.
Yes.
Okay.
Before we get too ravenous.
Hold on. Where are we?
What is this bizarre segue that's happening right now?
Okay. There we go.
This episode was written by Steve Lillian and Brian Winbrandt, who are executive co-producers on Gotham, and you could really tell because this episode was amazing.
Very Gotham-y.
Yes, indeed. And another familiar director, Maya Vivarillo, I guess is how you say it.
Vivarillo?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's done work on Hawaii Five-O, Preacher, Prison Break, among others. But
and you could kind of tell the preacheriness of it.
Yeah.
It was a little preachery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Prison Break. And I haven't seen a lot of Hawaii Five-O, but I could see a lot of Preacher in it. There was a bit of the absurd.
Oh, but it was good. I really enjoy when those two write together because they do such a good job.
They do.
The threads they brought in and just how they did things, it was excellent.
Yeah, and one of the things, and you know, I said preachery, and the reason I said that is because the use of color in this episode was amazing. I mean, down in the set with the Riddler, color was there. I mean, you could see it was dark, okay, but there was color. In that area, greens and purples down there.
Right.
And then in the hallways of Jeremiah's little bunker, there were splashes of color, especially when he saw that, you know, the end sign of their purple. I mean, huge purple sign. And I mean, how much of a like foreshadowing was that,
exactly.
Right?
So
there was a lot of little places like that. And I mean, even just Butch calling attention to, you know, his coloring and, you know, how stark his coloring was. He almost looked like an old timey black and white movie in that bar that looked like, you know, a real colored bar. Like he was in a colorized movie, but no one had colorized him. I mean, didn't it kind of look like that?
Yeah, definitely.
And it was very much like the work that Maya had done on Preacher. So I could really appreciate that kind of technicolor-y feel that was brought to this episode.
Yeah.
And it put you in the mind of whatever scene you were in. You know, Grundy being so black and white, and the Joker being purple, and the Riddler being green and purple, and just everything. Just thematic all the way through. I just loved it so much. So
yes,
yeah, the writing, the directing on point for this episode. Mm-hmm. I loved it so much. And one of the thing, also, I have to mention this one thing about the directing. The scene where Jerome goes into the office building, that's such a normal office, so not Gotham. Right? I mean, it could be in any city USA, that office building made of glass and chrome. And he's just walking around in his Joker, I mean, the Jokeriest outfit he has ever had on. And it is the most normal building we have ever seen on Gotham, ever. And it had regular lighting, like a real life lighting situation. So it was, I think, the first time we have ever seen a whole sequence set in a real world looking situation with this cartoony character in it. And it was amazing to see that. Because, you know, to have him walking around, and it was very Heath Ledger Joker.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you could see, okay, this is the guy who's going to pull that bank heist.
Right.
At the beginning of Dark Knight.
Right.
And yeah, definitely.
And so, you know, hello, thank you for that directorial decision there, because it was jarring to see. I mean, it was obvious that that choice was made on purpose, that it was a real looking building. So it was just very, very cool. But anyway, let's give our grade and then we'll get into the real meat of the episode.
All righty. I gave it 9 hidden twins.
Yeah, we speculated, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
We were kind of right, kind of, on one of our choices. I am right there with you. I give it 9 as well. 9 neon foreshadowing signs. Because that sign really jumped out at me.
Mm-hmm.
9, definitely. Way up there. In one of my favorite Gotham episodes ever. Just delightful from beginning to end. From Harvey running away, "You're not going to get me again." Ah!
he was doing the Han Solo in.
Yep. He was running
after him, you know, chasing him down.
Yep. But, you know, he has to make noise or else he'll get put under a spell. So he has to run. So good. I mean, just every beat of this episode thought out perfectly. Just amazing. I could watch this one 2 or 3 times, I think. So let me give my storyline titles. And there are a few. Some of them are small, but I had to name them all. A story, and they're not in any particular order. A story, Truth or Consequences. That would, of course, be the Riddler and his little game show. B story, he was his brother's keeper. That would be Jeremiah keeping Jerome, of course. And that also includes Miss Echo, who was quite interesting, I thought. Grungy drink! He has one. Mini vigilante. And we didn't see much of Bruce, but
no.
He got in his little bit there at the beginning of the episode. Echo of the future. And slap happy, which would be the ending there with the laughing and the weirdness. And slap happy, I'm guessing that I'm gonna also include the speculation on like what they're going to do with Grundy and that sort of thing as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And can I just say that Scarecrow is amazing looking in the show?
Very frightening. Forget having the fear toxin. I'm running. If I even see that guy anywhere close, I'm just running.
Yeah.
I don't have to wait for him to spray me. I'm just running.
Yeah. Big time. Big time. He is terrifying. But Harvey runs towards them, which tells you how crazy he is. He's coming after us. I loved every bit of that. Okay, so shall we talk about Riddler first?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, Riddler and his game show. I love that Riddler's back so much.
Riddle Factory.
Yeah, right. That was great. It sounded like he was advertising a business where he sold clothes. Right? It's time for the Riddle Factory. You can get this suit for $49.95. But, oh, man. He had this whole little setup there, an audience and a little podium and a Wheel of Fortune. And
the Wheel of Misfortune. I'm like...
So great. And of course his prize, a little suitcase full of money, which he has no intention of giving out ever. And because he's choosing his victims very well.
Yeah, exactly. Choosing, you know, one of the former demon biker gang guys that, you know, the guy's not, you know, he's going to pick the ones who are not that sharp.
Of course, because what he really wants is to dole out punishment. I mean, that's his goal. So yeah. He wants to feel better about himself. And so he wants to quiz these people who aren't going to get his riddles. And I don't think right now he wants to go up against anyone who's going to challenge him.
No, not at the moment. He's coming back. But he's not all the way where he was. So,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the feeling I get.
But I think this is, you know, a challenge to him, and it's helping him up his game.
Right.
Yeah.
He's honing his lacking skill right now. Because you can tell that when Lee gets one up on him at the end, that he's just not back to normal yet.
Right, but I love this whole sequence because she comes in, and I just love it because she is so calculating.
Mm-hmm.
She has been in charge of the Narrows. She knows what's best. She's trying to get that back, and she knows that she's going to have to calculate and take this risk, but she's not worried. Because she knows that just as the Riddler was still in there with Ed, that Ed's still in there with the Riddler.
Right.
And I love the turnabout where she doesn't know the answer, but she can get the answer from kind of feeling him out. And I just love the back and forth and her dialogue and how in control of things she is, mm-hmm. even in the midst of facing danger. I loved it. Loved every bit of this sequence.
Right. Because remember, she's known him from the day she stepped foot at the precinct.
Right.
So she knows that his riddles have something to do with what's going on in his head.
Exactly.
So as soon as she gets him talking about whatever's going on in his head, she can suss out what the riddle's about. And
right.
It's brilliant of her, it really is, to get him to talk about, you know, his stream of consciousness. And in doing so, she gets him to confess that, you know, of course, it's a promise. And
right.
Perfect, just perfect. That, and she turns it back on him that you gave it away. You told me what it was.
Yeah. And, then...
It makes him mad, but he also is kind of proud that she figured it out, right?
Right.
I mean, there's that little knife's edge there, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where he has no choice but to, you know, he promised that she would be able to ask him a riddle, so he can't go back on his promise after he's chided her, right?
and he won't give her the answer to his riddle because he won't give in that way, but he admits his defeat that way. But oh my goodness, the back and forth, and especially their conversation at the end where she's, you know, kind of egging him on, saying, you know, you can do better, even as, you know, she told him as Ed that he could do better and he could do more. And here she's kind of egging him on as the Riddler. You know, you did 3 banks in one day. You can do better. And, you know, he calls her out, you're playing a dangerous game. And she's in it all the way. Yep. I was like, okay, go for it, Lee. Interesting.
And she has to be manipulating him, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I but it is a dangerous game.
It is.
Ooh, because she's manipulating those feelings that Ed had and hoping that it's going to put the Riddler so much off that he won't be able to be fully in control, and but he's going to be in control enough that Ed may not come back. You know, it's a knife's edge balance.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It really is. Yeah. And she knows better than anyone how easily he is combustible.
Yeah.
And I was reminded reading through a review how she knows firsthand about his violence. She was witness to him killing Vicky Vale. Vicky Vale? Mm-hmm. Vale, whatever her first name was. The one who was dating Jim.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It was Vicky's aunt or whatever. I can't remember her name, but anyway, yeah.
Yeah, where it was a choice between Lee and her at the table.
Yeah.
Right? And James couldn't make that choice, but he ended up killing her anyway, right in front of Lee. Remember that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there she was. I mean, that was her sitting right there watching the whole thing. And it was Ed, you know, the Riddler doing that. So, you know, she has witnessed his violence firsthand.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so she knows she's playing a dangerous game. And I know that this show kind of hand waves those things away.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think we're ever going to see that she remembers that. You know, they don't really go back and say, oh yeah, she remembers that. But to me, I'm like, yeah, she does. She has to remember that, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, but yeah, it's so good. I mean, the characters are so, they've given them a history this season of this back and forth and this, you know, and it's just so deep, and it just shows you that Ed was the one who kind of encouraged her to take up the leadership in the Narrows and to be there and to do that. And so, you know, you have this back and forth that he encouraged her, and she likes that and sees what good she can do with the people there. But now she's having to manipulate him in order to keep it, and oh, it's just so rich.
It is, and full and all that. And I really do love it. I do. And I can't wait to see where they go with that next. I mean, are they going to be partners again? Are they going to just kind of have them together? Are they, you know, I don't know where they're going with it next.
Yeah, I don't either. And I don't know that with the number of episodes that we have left in this season, I mean, we may see the fallout by the end of the season. We may not. It may carry us into next season. I just don't know, because they have started this storyline and it's kind of continued and grown through the season. So I just don't know. But wherever they're going, I'm excited to see where they're going.
Agreed.
And I just can't predict where it's going to end up yet.
Right. So. I mean, are they going to be the king and the queen of the underworld by the end of the season? Who knows? Yeah, who knows? Right. Delicious. That's all I
Indeed.
Can say. Okay, so the main story in this episode.
Oh, my goodness.
Is Jerome.
Wow. I mean, We speculated last week that he was going to school, he was going to get a name, and I kind of speculated that it would be a sibling.
Mm-hmm.
I had no clue it was going to be an identical twin.
Right, right. Yeah, we got close, but...
And we speculated it was somebody being hidden, you know, yeah, something like that, and Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we got really close.
The reveal in this episode, it had, you know, the twist and the turn, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm hearing he gets the name, and I'm like, okay, Xander. You know, and I'm like, okay.
A brother? A cousin?
Who is this? And, you know, it's not ringing any bells. And so, you know, and by the way they talked about, okay, you know, he was this whiz kid and he went to work for this architecture company. He was structural engineering. I'm like, okay, he's going to use this some way in bringing down Gotham in some way because – and I'm thinking it's an older guy. You know, I'm thinking it's somebody older and more established, especially when we hear that this Xander has had interaction with Thomas Wayne. I'm like, Right. Okay, very interesting. And then we get there and the reveal that it's Jerome's twin. I'm like, what?
I know. Yeah, that took me right out of left field because he had to have been a child prodigy. I mean, he had have been because...
Well, you think about it this way. They are both very prodigies, but both in very vastly different ways.
Right.
It's one of those things where... they may have been, you know, it's that kind of nature versus nurture where they both had maybe a similar giftings in nature, but, you know, Jerome just took this left turn and.
Yeah. Yeah. And there were other surprises as well, which we'll probably get to in a minute, but we saw that Jeremiah is, well, first he goes and he hunts down this Xander, right? Mm-hmm. And he gets led to Echo. And Echo, you know, it looks like she's terrified. And, right? And Jeremiah is picking at this empty cage. And he says, I was wondering about that. And then she takes him down. And I was...
Oh my goodness. I just squeed.
Yeah, I was shocked by that.
She just kind of turned and, you know, she's like, that's for you. And just immediately took him down, took Jerome down.
And that's for me to transport you. And I was like, wow, it's that easy?
But, I mean, Jeremiah said he has been prepping his entire life at this point.
Yep.
And he says that she has devoted her life to him. So, I mean, we don't know what kind of powers, training, abilities that she has. Now, granted, she probably had the upper hand, you know, just...
Sure, she knew he was coming and...
pulling and that kind of stuff. But you look at how much work Jeremiah put into building 6 years of building this bunker-like house with this 100-acre... maze and cells and trainings and never going to work and only having a I mean, you think about how scared of his brother, but how he knew his brother was going to come for him and the planning. It's just amazing to think about all the work that he put in. And it's just, it's so cool to see a character brought in with that much backstory in one episode, and you're like, I believe it. I totally believe it.
And not just that, but I don't know that he is that awfully scared of his brother.
No. I think he is seeing the path that his brother's gone down, and he's prepping, and he's like, okay, I'm going to be ready. Okay, the police can't handle him. Arkham can't handle him. I'm ready.
Right.
But, oh my goodness, so rich a background for having it revealed in one story.
Yeah. I felt like he is Okay, where Batman is usually the other side of the coin from Joker, he's the other side of the coin for his brother.
Yes.
He is an equal match, maybe more.
Right.
I really, really felt like he is just as calculating as his brother.
Oh, yes. I really see them as two sides to the same coin.
Yeah.
I mean, that all those things really, with that focus, the focus and the drive that Jerome has for anarchy and bringing the madness, Jeremiah has that focus and that drive to protect himself and the world from that madness.
And remember, he's an architect. So that's building things. That is putting things together, where his brother likes to tear things down. So it is almost literally like they are two sides of the same coin.
Oh, yes.
And so it is crazy how they are alike yet different in this episode. And I honestly think that this is such a great setup for him being the Joker, because he already has that in him.
Right. And see, the difference there is, while we have enjoyed Jerome's madness and the way that he plays things and just how, you know, just bringing those hints of the future Joker in his performance and his nature, putting Jeremiah's calculatingness and his means to figure things out and to think a little more down the road, and you combine that and you push him over the edge into madness, what a foil that will make for Batman.
Right. And his order.
Ooh. Oh. Mm.
You know, order is just another form of chaos.
Yeah.
You know, it's... And when he goes insane.
Oh.
Wow. That is going to be something to behold. That's all I can say.
I mean, it people, like, I point to episodes like this, and I'm like, this is why the head of Fox says that he wants to see more seasons of Gotham.
Yep.
Because you get smart storylines like this that are thought out and look towards the future, that honor the comics, that are deep and that are not bringing drama just to close out storylines.
Right.
And I'll jump back to Arrow and this week's Arrow.
Yeah.
And I'm just frustrated this season with Arrow writers.
No kidding.
For just
this
bringing,
season?
Well,
the last
me,
couple of seasons for me. But
for me, this season has been worse, because it just seems like they're bringing drama for drama's sake, and they seem to be writing themselves in corners, so they have to go write themselves out.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the writers here on Gotham, even though they've got a good head and a good core, but even the ones who are coming in for an episode or two can draw on that. And they're thinking long term. They're trying to lead into the comics or pay homage, and it's smarter.
Mm-hmm.
And I really appreciate that, and that's why I want to see more seasons, because they play things out over these long seasons, and I really appreciate how they can play a long storyline like the storyline between Ed and Lee this season, and it feels natural. And they can play a one-story episode story that introduces us to a new character and it doesn't feel out of left field. It feels natural. It feels correct, even though it's a surprise. And so that's why I really, really enjoy this series is because of the writing.
And okay. I need to ask you a question.
Uh-huh.
Don't hate me if I've forgotten. Okay. Did you watch Farscape?
Yes, okay. I've seen it, but I've only seen it one time.
Okay.
So it's one of those ones I need to go back and watch again.
Okay. But this reminds me of Farscape, where they had a solid arc from very beginning to the very end.
Oh, yes.
And but they still had episodes that were self-contained, but it didn't matter. They kept that arc solid from beginning to end, even though there were little stories in between.
Right. And it's an underappreciated show. I mean, that show was so underappreciated. It needs to be, you know, back in reruns on the air. And and that's, you know, I think we're getting more viewers here with Gotham than Farscape ever got because it was on Sci-Fi.
Right.
But I feel kind of the same way, where I think when people go back and watch this show, they're going to realize, you know, why it's so good and come to appreciate it. I just want people to appreciate it
now
when it's on the air.
I agree. And I wish more people had appreciated Farscape when it was on, like me, because I actually watched a few episodes and went, oh, this isn't for me. And I had to go back after it was off the air and watch it to really appreciate it. And I'm ashamed of myself for doing that. But
there's shows like that. I mean, I did not watch BSG when it was on the air. I had other things that I was watching, and I just like, I don't have time.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, somebody told me about it. I watched Caprica first, and then I watched BSG. And it's one of my favorite series now.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, I'm like, oh, I really appreciated that I got to watch it like two episodes a Saturday over the whole run, as opposed to Sci-Fi's, okay, here's half a season, now we're going to wait 6 months, here's half a season, no more. You know, so some of those things I'm kind of glad, but it's one of those things where there's great shows, and you know, it's our job to tell people about it and say, watch it now, watch it now, watch it now.
Right. I know. And so, I mean, this is an example of a solidly written show.
Right.
And yes, there are times when it fails. Fish.
Yes.
But for the most part, it is solid. The acting solid. The writing is solid. The direction is brilliant. And, you know, I can pull a handful, just a handful of shows out and say, yeah, this one's like that. This one's like that. This one's like that.
Right.
But, you know, Parks and Rec, Farscape, The Office.
Yeah.
You know, not many, really, where, like, there's a joke, and then you go back and you watch the episode again, and you're like, oh, man, there's another layer to that joke.
So, right. And what I appreciate about this show, and we get to see, like some of those shows, these actors, for the most part, are fairly new and unknown actors. I mean... And the actors that they do bring in that are more established just, you know, kind of bring everybody up. Here we have this character of Jerome who was introduced. And man, oh man, is the actor just taking the character and grown with it. And now we get to see him play his flip side of playing, you know, this kind of reserved guy, this calculating guy, so different. I mean, you look at Jerome on screen in that cell, just going crazy in that cell, wanting to be released. And you look at the flip side of Jeremiah looking at him on the camera and just observing.
And they're different people.
And talking with talking with Jim and Harvey and just totally different people.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yes, that is the type of show that we have, that people can take these roles and just grow with them and take that next challenge, like we've seen with Barbara over the past few seasons.
Right. And David, when he was two characters.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's so good. They just put on these layers and they grow. And I just really, really appreciate it. I mean, seeing the two characters here in this episode of the challenges back and forth. And we hear, you know, we hear this story, excuse me, about Jerome threatening his brother. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason that he was spirited away. And
it being a lie?
Hearing it later come back, well, that was a lie. So, you know, this calculation, I've got to get away from my brother. How can I do that? Oh, so rich.
Yeah, that was a shock. You know, I completely bought into it when he said, yeah, he put a knife to my neck, or he was killing animals and all this stuff. You know, you thought, oh, well, sure he was.
That makes sense to his character.
Sure. And,
yeah.
And then later on, when they're alone in that hallway, and he says, so the story you made up, which one is it this week that I...
Oh, yeah.
That I put a knife to your neck, that I tortured you, that, you know, which one was it?
Right.
And, you know, and our mother deserved to be killed when she abandoned me. And yeah, you think to yourself, wow, that is a little layered. And you're thinking, or at least I was, Jeremiah is kind of evil.
Yeah. And you look at who he's got with this Echo, that we get just a very few lines for her, but her physical prowess of being once again able to take down Jerome, of just taking out Harvey and Jim both.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm just like, ooh.
Well, is she going to get affected by the serum as well?
I don't know. So, but I mean, you're like, is she going to be the Harley?
Right. She's devoted her life to him. Ooh. Yeah, that's my thought. And see, that's more surprising to me than the Jeremiah Joker thing. That have we seen our Harley now?
Yeah.
Because, you know, we had that kind of hint from David, which we'll talk about when we talk about Chris's feedback. I think she might be Harley. Because why would we have her?
Right. And, you know, it's so good. I loved every part of this episode.
Yeah,
I mean, it's one of those episodes that a lot of Gotham episodes fly by, but this one flew by. I'm talking.
Yeah, it did.
To Jada on the Facebook group during commercials. I'm trying to keep up with Twitter. And it just flew by because of how good it was.
Yeah,
and
it really was.
And even these little vignettes, we got this vignette with the two vignettes with the Legion of Horribles.
Yeah. The brunch meeting, right? And then at the very end, so it was bookmarked by the Legion of Horribles.
And everybody is just so in character. I mean, Penguin's got the vampire chic hairstyle going on.
On point.
You've got Firefly. You've got Mr. Freeze. You've got Scarecrow. You get the Hatter coming in, styled up. I mean, it was just amazing. And then we get Grundy Butch, who I love the fact. So we get those vignettes, and it's so cool. But we've got to talk about Grundy and Penguin because...
Yeah, let's do.
Because Penguin hears that Jerome just wants to bring the city to madness. And what happens after that, he doesn't really care who's in charge.
Right.
And, you know, so he's going to leave that for everybody else to find out.
You want to know the one part about this episode that bothered me?
Okay.
Is when he said, I could care less.
Oh.
It's I couldn't care less.
I know. It's like that phrasing that just grinds
it,
on the
grill. Yeah, it makes me grit my teeth. I could care less what happens. And I'm like, you mean you couldn't care less?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It bugged me. But anyway. So, yes, he says he couldn't care less what happened.
So, but, I mean, that leads Penguin to think, okay, he realizes that there's going to be other people. There's going to be all these people vying for control once the chaos comes. Mm-hmm. And he realizes he can't do it alone.
Right.
So, he's going to look up his buddy. Mm-hmm. He's going to look up Butch. And so... Butch is just drinking his cares away at Cheers Light.
Yep.
So
Cheers Light. Everybody knows his name, that's for sure.
Yeah. So he comes in and Oswald really thinks that he's the same guy. He's going to be able to come in. He's going to be able to convince him that it's going to be like old times, that he needs his help. Come on, old pal, old buddy. And you know, Butch Grundy is just not having it. Mm-hmm. He's his own man now. He's not happy about who he is, but he is just not going to be put upon like he was before.
Right. And not just that, but he's wallowing.
And oh, yeah.
He doesn't want to be interrupted from his wallowing. You know, Tabitha's never going to love me, so...
Well, and it takes that pushing by Penguin to pull that out. And he hears that little nugget of, you know, how he was affected in the swamp and that affection that he still feels for Tabitha. And Oswald is sharp.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, he does his research. He looks into things. We've seen how he does that all these seasons. And he uses that. He comes back to him with a whole barrel full of Indian Hill chemical and says, listen, you work with me. We'll find Hugo. Maybe he can turn you back so you can be there for Tabitha.
That's right. And of course, that is the most tempting thing he could say.
Well, and yeah, it tempts him. He's still leery, but he's willing enough to get out of that point to work with him because he's willing to find a way to get back to Tabby.
Right. There's something in it for me.
Right. And you love that he comes in and they've talked enough and he comes into this part two of the brunch meeting.
Yeah.
And he comes in introduced as Grundy, not as Butch,
right,
but as Grundy. So he's playing that role of kind of this oaf, this, you know, guy that you can talk around. It doesn't matter.
He's not to underestimate. That's all.
Right.
Yeah.
And so he's willing to play that role and feed that information back. Oh, it's just so rich, those little turns, because you see the setup of how things are going forward. And those scenes were so short.
Yeah.
But so rich.
So good. And we'll, again, it's another thing we're going to talk about, but this is something we're going to talk about at the very end of the episode. I see them repairing all these villain relationships. You notice all these horribles coming together here, right?
Yeah.
And Jerome saying, I don't care what you do after I make the city crazy. But they're all banding together. So we see, you know, Oswald coming back together with Butch and all these other villains, you know, kind of as a group.
Right.
We see the three ladies together as the sirens.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a bit of a bond between them. We see Penguin and the Riddler together again. You know, they're friends again, sort of, in a way.
Yeah.
And we also see Lee and the Riddler as something.
Yes.
Okay, so they're all coming together, and we know something about the last episode of the season that might give a hint as to what's coming next season. And yeah, it looks like they are setting up something huge for next season. Mm-hmm. And bringing all these villains together is the biggest subvert I have ever seen. Right?
Uh-huh.
Because to bring all happy joy villains together in order to have this other thing happen is crazy.
Right. And we still have Ivy out there.
Oh, yeah, and Ivy.
And well, what faction is she going to join?
Yeah, in? Now...
Oh, ooh, wow.
We know she's at odds with Selena, but she is very chemical-based.
Yeah.
So if they need her for something chemical, I mean, I can see where Jerome might pick up on her, but I think she's out on her own.
Yeah, I think she's an independent player. I mean, yeah, I can see her going where the wind blows. I mean, she might go here and this will aid one faction, and then something happens and she comes in and aids another faction. But she's an independent player, and so I don't see her joining one faction for long.
No. But I don't see any factions staying together for very long at all.
Oh, no. Huh.
But I just think it's funny that they're getting all these people together in a happy little team. And if they're planning on doing what we think they're doing, boy, yeah, this is like lulling everyone into this false sense of security. Or a false sense of, hey, look, all the villains are getting together, like a little cabal of a cabal of badness, a league of badness. That he calls them horribles, and that is what they are. But you know that they're like a loose little group of merry men, and. You know, we're thinking, oh, that's great. They're all together and, you know, hey, it could be great that they're all together and running around. And yeah, it's not going to last very long. if what happens, what we think is going to happen, wow. All I can say is, wow, it's going to be like roaches scattering underneath when you take the refrigerator out from the wall and all the roaches go scattering. I mean, if you have ever had a house with roaches, I haven't actually, but I've seen it on TV. So, but yeah, I just, oh man, crazy. So we've talked about Echo. We've talked about Grundy. We have Bruce, who has gone off to find Jeremiah.
Yeah.
And really all we get is, he has gone off. He has taunted Gordon at the beginning of the episode, saying to meet him there at St. Ignatius.
Yeah.
And yes, that happens, is that he meets there. They get the information. And we also learn that Alfred is in.
Oh, yeah.
That they are together on the vigilante.
Yeah, they are a team.
Right. And I think that's pretty much what we're meant to get from it, right?
Right.
And then James says, if he does this again, I'll take him in.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting at odds with James, but not so at odds with Alfred.
Right, exactly.
I think that's all we're taking away from this, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a good thing. I mean, I'm glad he and Alfred are solid at this point. I think the James thing, I think that's going to change.
Yeah.
I think he's going to do something that helps James and at the end of the season, they're going to be solid too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And then Slap Happy, of course, is the very, very end of the episode where, we find out, because we didn't have a solid take on what Scarecrow was doing, we find out what he and I guess Freeze were doing back at the lab. Hold on.
Meanwhile.
Back at the lab of deplorables. They apparently were coming up with a formula to make the city insane.
Right. The Scarecrow has made this formula, and Jerome says, okay, we're going to need your help, Mr. Freeze, to ramp this up big time.
Yeah.
Because this is a inhaler that you don't want to, you know, take a whiff of.
Right, right.
Oh, my gosh. So they bring in this experimental subject who looks surprisingly like Ed.
Yeah. I'm guessing they got him from the building at the beginning of the episode. Do you think that's where they got him? The executive? Well, they call him a business executive.
Oh, could be.
So, I'm thinking he's one of the businessmen from the building that, you know, Firefly and all of them were waiting outside with a van and they herded a couple of the people out there.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that's where they got him. And Grundy was like, no, you're not trying anything on me. So that's good. They didn't try anything on him. And that guy was just not ready to get experimented on. But oh, well,
no.
Too bad.
Yeah.
So they spray him. And gee, what happens?
He starts laughing and smiling uncontrollably.
Yeah, not just smiling, though.
Yeah.
Joker smiling. Yeah. Looks pretty familiar.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And this is really cool that it ties the Joker in with the Scarecrow.
Oh, yeah.
Because we never got that before. And it really makes sense that the Joker isn't a chemical guy. You know, why would he come up with something like this? But to tie him in with the Scarecrow, who is a doctor, a chemical guy, and Freeze, who is also, you know, a doctor, this is great because it makes 100% sense. And it also means that the Joker has, you know, his brains working, that he has pulled people in to help him, that he knows what he wants. And of course, they've made this to his specifications. I mean, they've made this formula that causes, like, I guess, rictus of the face that causes their muscles to pull back in a smile. And boy, that was chilling at the end there.
Mm-hmm.
And he is laughing maniacally and everyone's looking at the guy like, wow, that is creepy.
Yeah, indeed.
So, yeah, that, and of course, that is nuts.
Yeah.
And we get the famous the Joker venom.
Yes, indeed.
So, and
yes,
I know indeed. You put a link in our blog post about the Joker venom.
I did.
And you put a link to the Joker Venom, which goes to the DC page, the Wikipedia page, and the DC page. I just wanted to mention that over the decades, it appeared at the first appearance of the Joker in Batman 1. And over the decades, it has had many names. You might know it as, what is it, Smilex from the movie, right?
Right.
So it's Smilex with a Y. Laughing gas, Joker gas, happy gas, giggle gas, Joker juice, laughing toxin, laugh-a-loads, perma smile, smiley gas, and Joker toxin. So it's had all those names. It's not just this Joker toxin, Joker venom. It's been everywhere. It's not just from the movie. So it does have this long and storied history with the Joker, and I am really glad they brought it into the show.
Yes, indeed.
All right. You think we covered everything? I mean, we've talked plenty.
I think so.
But, okay, me too. And we do only have one feedback, so let's go. Chris says, welcome back, Karen, and don't feel bad about saying, of course, so often. I specifically kept it out of my head this week, Chris. So. At work, I'm always known for saying, how's it going? How's it going, Chris? If you happen to do episodes over the summer where you watch Batman movies, might I suggest Gotham by Gaslight? Actually, that sounds good. I haven't seen it yet.
I have not either, and that's what I want to see.
So. Awesome. Maybe we'll do a John, Jeff, Karen episode again with Gotham by Gaslight. So maybe hold off watching it. No, we can watch it ahead of time. One thing about last episode, this week I heated up one of those Campbell's microwavable soups and it kind of tripped while carrying it, and some splashed on my hand, and that hurt. He put it all in caps. So. I couldn't imagine an entire bowl of that in the face. Yeah.
Ooh.
It's hot.
Mm.
Hot soup is hot. Okay, here's his little point by point blow thing. Use the tongs, Carl! I loved that line. Right? Where he's just saying it out of the blue during the brunch. Use the tongs, Carl! It was great. Ed might be the best game show host since Richard Dawson's Damon Killian on The Running Man. Yeah, he's pretty good. I really wanted Jerome to say, let's put a smile on that face when he was holding the switchblade. Yeah. Is Jeremiah going to become the real Joker? He already wears some purple.
Well, you heard our thoughts.
Yeah, you heard our thoughts. And David, Miss Suze's thoughts. I cracked up at Jerome waving at the camera while doing his yoga. Yeah, me too. That was funny, right? Hey, hathead, take Crane and go find Jimbo and his bearded sidekick. Nice Killing Joke reference with a variation of the one bad day line. Yeah, I jumped out of my seat at that. Yeah. That I was like, yes! I don't want them to do a Killing Joke, though.
No.
No, never, because that was way dark. Harvey going after Jervis and Crane reminded me of Han Solo yelling as he chased after the stormtroopers on the Death Star. Yeah. Yeah. I think everybody probably thought that.
Yeah.
Because that is a perfect analogy. I think Donald played that perfectly, too.
Yeah.
So good. Must go, must go, must go. Jervis and Crane running for their lives was one of the funniest things I've seen in a while. A form of smile X. Notice the victim's skin color. And then it says Jeff's note. I put a link in the blog post to Joker Venom. So yep. Thank you, Jeff. And everyone needs to go there to the blog post and read it. There's going to be some other stuff in the blog post too. Prediction, Jerome dies, but not before infecting Jeremiah with his toxin. Jeremiah, now insane, adopts Jerome's persona and improves on it to become the Joker. And then Karen's note, smart guess. And I also have a link there to a comicbook.com article where David mentions that Jerome is not going to be the Joker, but that he has a hand in creating him. So yes, that is most likely. And the Batmobile keys this week can only go to one person, and we have our first back-to-back winner in Jerome. Cameron is always a joy to watch in this role. Also, for the second week in a row, I can't fault this episode, so I give it a 10 out of 10 Wheels of Misfortune. Thank you, Chris. Such great feedback. I love it.
Indeed. And we want to hear from you, and here's how you can do it.
To have your feedback heard and read on Gotham Undercover, please submit by our weekly deadline of Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/Gotham Undercover. And follow the show on Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram at GothamGSM. Please send us your feedback at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, where you can type out your thoughts, leave a voice message using the provided SpeakPipe widget, or you can call 304-837-2278. To find the complete list of Golden Spiral Media podcasts and to leave your 5-star reviews, simply go to goldenspiralmedia.com/apple. Now, here are your hosts, Karen and Jeff.
Indeed.
Thank you, John.
Thank you so much. So, yes, indeed.
John's so good at that. The silver vox.
That's right. Who you get to start podcasting with very soon.
Yeah, about a week and a half, something like
that.
Yeah. So you want to tell us about the next episode, Jeff?
Yes, indeed. Next week's episode, A Dark Knight. That's entertainment.
That's entertainment. Dun, dun, dun. I'm doing a top hat, like the little frog from the WB.
Yeah, the top hat and the cane.
Yeah. Indeed.
Arkham inmates are still running freely in Gotham, and they're only getting more difficult to catch. Gordon develops a plan, but reluctantly has to turn to Bruce for help.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Barbara finds out just how far her new friends are willing to go for her in the all-new A Dark Knight, That's Entertainment episode of Gotham, airing Thursday, April 12th, 8 p.m. Eastern on Fox.
Yay, right. I can't wait. And so after that, we have another episode on the 19th, To Our Deaths and Beyond. And a week off for the NFL draft. Football. Actually, I like football. The final three episodes of the season will air in May, with our finale being on the 17th. And our season finale has a very interesting title. And you and I were talking about this before we started recording. And
yes,
we
indeed.
Are both incredibly excited about it. The title is No Man's Land.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you read Batman comics and are as old as me, you might remember an arc that ran through all the Batman titles in the late 90s called No Man's Land. And it was an event, let's say, by Greg Rucka. And it was all the episodes were interconnected, but you could read bits and pieces of them. Mm-hmm. As long as you read a majority of them, you got the major plot points and all that, where Gotham was cut off from the rest of society.
Right.
And it ran amok, as it were, because they didn't have any rules or anything. And no intervention from anywhere else. And as we know, Gotham is, you know, crazy town, literally. So it was an amazing storyline. It ran for a whole year, and it just intertwined throughout all the Batman titles. And it is so big. It's not just like a few trade paperbacks. It's in four like huge volumes. And so I will have a little write-up for you guys. It's not going to be a big thing. It's going to be a little write-up that Jeff will put in next week's blog post. And I'm going to recommend, if you can track down digital copies or whatever, it's on Comicology and Amazon, which is, you know, the same thing. It just depends on which platform you use.
Yeah.
It's digitally available. But I would recommend, if that's where they're going with next season, that something cataclysmic happens and Gotham is cut off from the rest of society, and everyone goes scattering to the winds inside Gotham. I recommend that you guys at least read parts of this series.
Yeah, definitely.
So this will be like my little, you know, Hoover's Comic Corner for y'all, for Gotham Undercover.
Yeah.
So again, it's called No Man's Land. If you want to look it up now, you can. It's going to take a while to read it. I would recommend over the summer, but I mean, you could definitely get a start on it whenever. But again, I'll do a little write-up on it for the blog post, and Jeff will pop that in next week.
Indeed.
But yeah, we were, both of us were like super excited for it. Jeff's gonna do his homework and read it.
Yeah, probably over the, do a nice summer read.
And I think I'm going to reread it because, like I told him, I remember the event. My husband and I both collected all the issues and read it. But it's been a long time. It's been 18 years since then. So I don't remember detailed information about it. I remember the overall business. So I'd like to go back and reread it as well. So I'm going to track down my copies and reread it. So I'm going to, like I said, I'm going to get some stuff together for you guys and give you more details next week. So you have that to look forward to next week.
Very cool. Very cool.
And I think that's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, that sounds good. We had a great episode and a lot of fun talking about it.
Oh, my God. Such a great episode.
Indeed.
Let's hope that next week is just as good. And it looks like it.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be very interesting. Yeah. So.
So stay on the edge of your seat, guys.
Yeah.
And we'll talk to you in a week.
All right.